This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
It's been a while, Crosby. It's been a while. I haven't been here. I've just got to show you how the mics work. Ready? Here we go.
James Acaster on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, my name's James Acaster. This is The Shuffle Show. Is it The Shuffle Show? We don't really ever call it that. We've never really given it a name. This is called James Acaster. But we're going to be putting our iPods on shuffle. Matthew Crosby and I, a little bit later. Nirvana on FUBAR Radio. Matthew Crosby, hello.
Hello. I've not heard those guys. Are they
never heard them. Yeah, they're new.
I should check them out.
From Seattle.
Seattle.
Yeah, from Seattle.
All the way in America.
Yeah, yeah, it's very good, Seattle. And another band from there,
they seem like
Frasier.
They seem like a cheery... Oh, Frasier, I love Frasier. It's my favourite band.
They're a bit pretentious, people say, but I think it's quite accessible.
They've only got one song, but it's a really good song. And there's three or four different versions of it. The Blues Are Calling. Scrambled Eggs. Do you know what the story is behind that song?
All I know about that song is that Kelsey Grammer sings it.
He sings it himself, yeah.
They're calling again.
That's all I know. Well, what's the story?
It's actually a song about the show, but in a slightly cryptic way.
Ah.
Yo, baby, I hear the Blues are calling. Tossed salad and scrambled eggs is the people who call into his radio show. They're the Blues. The people who are down.
Yeah.
Who are calling a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
But because he sort of doesn't view them, you know, he views them as tossed salad and scrambled eggs, basically. He views them as nutcases.
Right, okay.
You seem a bit confused, but baby, I got you pegged. That's him saying, well, I'm going to sort out their problems.
Yeah.
But in truth, he can't really sort out their problems because he doesn't know what to do with those tossed salad and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Boom. Frasier has left the building.
Yeah, he says that at the end, doesn't he?
He says, good night, Seattle, we love you.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other one he does.
Proper rock star.
He's great.
I didn't know you knew so much about... is there any other theme tunes for sitcoms that you know the story behind? Friends?
Well, the Rembrandts, I'll Be There For You. It's a classic. No, I don't know the story behind
that. They filmed the opening titles at 4 in the morning at Warner Brothers.
Yeah, that's the fountain, yeah.
Yeah, the fountain. That's all, so you already knew that. See, I have a feeling today I won't be able to do any bits of trivia that you don't already know.
No, let's see.
I mean, yeah, I could try. I will try.
I'm surprised they didn't like refilm it. Because it's quite weird, isn't it? When you get to, especially because obviously Matthew Perry, famously addicted to Vicodin, fluctuating weight, he would go back and forth between being quite chubby or being incredibly gaunt. But in the opening sequence, he still was, you know, like whatever he was, 30 years young with his centre parting. They didn't.
But if they keep refilming the fountain scene with him, like, you know, he's going to be struggling a bit more when he's a bit chubbier.
Well, here's the thing, because they refilmed the intro to 2 and a Half Men.
Yeah.
Men. But they refilmed just the end part, so that the little kid turns into his older, weirder looking self. And it's absolutely grotesque.
It's horrible.
It's like something out of a Clive Barker movie. It's gross.
Yeah. No one wants to see anyone becoming a teenager over a period of years or
or over a period of half a second.
Yeah, you know what it's like when you're going through puberty and your parents just lock you in a different room for years and they don't want to see the development. Yeah, that is a whole... If you haven't seen it at home, then you should YouTube that, because that kid turned it into his older self. And I think they should have got rid of him, that kid.
Well, he was the only reason he wasn't fired, because he's a fundamentalist Christian. He publicly spoke out against what a bad moral message the show was sending out. But the only reason he wasn't fired was because he was still better than Charlie Sheen, behaviour-wise.
You're just the second most naughty kid in the class.
Exactly.
So you're okay.
Luckily, Charlie Sheen's the naughtiest kid.
I mean, that third guy, what a dweeb.
He's a dweeb.
Do anything naughty at all.
But I mean,
he's the half, if anything.
Do you think so?
He's the half, in my opinion. That little kid's more of a man than he is. Stick it up for what he believes in.
Well, that seems very unfair. I think John Cryer is the heart, not the half.
Yeah, I've always felt like he's a 2 and a Half Men.
2 and a Half Men. I mean, that would be a confusing name for a show.
I mean, it's confusing enough as it is, that show. I'm not really sure what it... What is it? It's just about two guys who have...
It's about two brothers. One guy's sort of unlucky in love. One guy is a playboy. It's basically Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen's being himself with no script.
Exactly, yeah. Also, interesting fun fact about Charlie Sheen was that here's a couple of things. You need to block a blocker scene. You need to rehearse it.
Right.
Frasier, by the way, never rehearsed.
Really?
Never rehearsed with the cast. The cast would all rehearse. Frasier would come in because he wanted to keep that performance fresh.
Wow.
But
did he do the same for Sideshow Bob?
I can only imagine. I can only imagine he did. He never.
Had to draw his scenes afterwards or more.
Just improvise the entire thing. They wrote an episode around it. But Charlie Sheen, if you watch it, all of his blocking is he's either sat on at the kitchen table or sat on a sofa or sat by the piano or stood by a chair because he was always so hammered he needed to hold on to something, otherwise he'd fall over. So you very rarely see him walking from one place to another.
That's the kind of thing that I thought, if they made that public, I would have watched Two and a Half Men.
Yes, so exactly.
I would have watched
but
it more.
It was only after, you know, after he was fired when it all came out and you thought, It would be if you knew there was a sitcom where one guy was so drunk he can barely perform but just about getting away with it.
Yeah, because I mean, you, Matthew Cosby, by the way, in the nation's favourite sketch group, Pappies, you do gigs where you do get hammered, right? I mean, you at Latitude.
We've not
every gig, let's point this out.
No.
Not every gig.
No, very rarely, but once a year we get drunk and it's always a lot more fun for us. Yeah. I think that's one thing you learn about drinking.
Right.
If you there's two sort of stages of drinking. There's either where you're drunk and you go, oh, this is ruining the gig.
Yeah,
I'm drunker than this, or you're so drunk that you're ruining the gig but you don't care.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the stage you've got to get to.
By watching Two and a Half Men, what stage do you think Charlie Sheen was in all those things?
I think he definitely didn't care.
Drunk and didn't care. He'd go home and go, that was great. I nailed it.
I don't think he'd even think about it.
No.
I don't think he'd even remember.
No, that's the point.
He wouldn't even remember he was ever on the show.
Do you have a memorable moment from a drunk gig? Like something that happened that was either so bad or so good that it sticks in your head from a... Because you do it at Latitude and you've done it in Edinburgh, haven't you?
Yeah, we've done it.
Are you drinking anything in particular?
We drink Advocar, which is not a great... It's a bit...
I've never had it.
It's a sort of eggy... It's a bit like custard and a bit like petrol, but not as good as drinking either of those things.
Okay.
It's horrid. So it often ends up with, like, we do this gig and then I just go and puke immediately afterwards. So that's not a lot of... I mean, if I was doing that regularly, that would be an intervention situation, I think.
Yeah, and you would end up saying, like, that you don't like the writers of Pappies and that you got tiger blood and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I would have, if there was a sort of Chuck Lorre figure to Pappies, this sort of mysterious guy who writes it all for us, then I'd definitely be having a bit of a high-profile beef with him via some sort of form of social media. But normally we're just like at Latitude we did one gig which was our gig which was really good fun and then we were asked to do like a sort of best of sketch show but it was after our gig so we were still hammered and that was awful. That was Tom couldn't get his microphone, his little clip-on microphone, to stay on and it fell off and he trod on it and you could hear just this audible, because obviously it was a microphone, you could hear an audible crunch and then the mic went dead. And we were told, please look after these mics, they're £300 each and the next sketch group's got to use them. And so Tom just went on stage, the mic fell off, he trod in it, and they brought the lights down on us.
They brought the lights down on you?
Just halfway through a sketch. So Ben and I were still doing the lines, but with all the lights out. Awful.
That is awful.
Yeah, it's bad.
But
I don't recommend it.
You're here today with your iPod?
Yes, my iPod, it's here.
Are you feeling confident about putting it on shuffle?
Why not? Yeah.
I think,
I said
to you before the show, I'm pretty confident. I think you're going to absolutely nail this and it's going to be annoying.
Well, my one worry is that there's going to be songs I've got no idea what they are. Like, you know, like deep album tracks from deluxe versions.
Yes.
You know, just when they released Gracelands and they just, the second disc was, they re-released Gracelands and the second disc was all just the bass lines.
Yeah, just the bass line and just,
which are great bass lines, but I never...
Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes bass line is amazing.
It is, but I'd sooner hear the whole song around it.
Who is listening to that on its own?
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, maybe
I would love it if that was the first track that came up.
But then people tweeting in, fake, you faked it. But we didn't. This is all real. As usual, I'll go first, to take the first plunge. So here we go. Oh, Saint Pepsi.
Saint Pepsi.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Saint Pepsi. I said there like it was a bubba.
Like, like at the tube station.
Yeah, like it was a tube.
King's Cross and Pepsi.
King's Cross and Pepsi.
We were really entering the chill out zone there, weren't we?
I mean, we started out. So that is, I mean, and that album, I was saying to you, that album is really upbeat. Like, it's really cheesy dance tunes all the way, and like a really fun album. And that is the one song.
That's your cool down afterwards.
That is the one song that's just like.
Is it mid album or is it at the end? Does it end?
Yeah, I think that's like track 7.
Really?
You know, like after a bit, maybe before an interlude. There's a little interlude, I remember, that's like just some vocal song. It's a sample clearly off a film. Oh, here we go. You will probably know this, so okay, I can run it by you.
Let's give it a go.
So it's. I thought the dialogue sounded it was from a Woody Allen film or something, but it might not be.
Okay.
But it's someone, and they're clearly shopping for engagement rings for their girlfriend with her, and it's like this one, I love this one.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. And actually, do you know what? I could just find
Let's find it, and we'll see.
On my iPod.
I'm trying to think of what Woody Allen film would have shopping for engagement rings.
Yeah, I don't know if
everyone says
I
love you. Maybe might be.
I haven't heard of that one. He does a film every year, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And some of them are fine, and some of them are awful. But very few of them are sort of the classic 70s Woody Allen. Very few of them are Annie Hall. I mean, one of them is Annie Hall.
One of them definitely was Annie Hall.
Yeah, one of them is definitely Annie Hall.
We can't deny
and
that.
And Manhattan is very nearly Annie Hall, but it's not.
I've not seen Manhattan.
Oh, it's a corker.
I've seen Annie Hall a number of times, but not ever seen Manhattan.
Annie Hall, sitcom fans, was the inspiration behind Peep Show.
Was it?
The scene where they've got the subtitles at the bottom, that's what Jesse and Sam saw and thought, yeah, we could do that, but a sitcom.
Ah.
So there we go, bringing it back
Matthew
to sitcoms.
Crosby knows everything about sitcoms.
That's a show I'm pitching to FUBAR Radio.
Just called that.
Just me talking about sitcoms.
Welcome to Matthew Crosby Knows Everything About Sitcoms. Today, asking me about sitcoms. Imagine if every week you did a show where you got interviewed. So that the guest was always the person interviewing you.
That's a great idea.
And it was always on you. Amanda, that's a new show idea. Please write that down.
We've got a thumbs up there.
New show idea is that the same person gets interviewed every week.
That's a great idea.
And it'd just be called The Matthew Crosby Show.
I mean, in many ways, that is the Comedian's Comedian podcast, isn't it? Because effectively, Stu is asking them to interview him.
Really?
That's kind of it, isn't it? You learn more about Stu as the weeks go on than you do about the acts.
You do learn a lot about him. And everyone, listen to the Comedian's Comedian podcast.
It's a cracking podcast.
Matthew and myself are interviewed on it, or we interview Stu, depending on
How you take it. I've realised now that my Edinburgh procrastination is listening to, like, I feel like I'm doing work.
Yeah.
If I listen to John Gordillo being interviewed, that's kind of the same as writing material, isn't
it? Yeah.
Nope, it isn't.
Because I'll feel inspired.
I'll feel inspired.
It's like I've been watching Chef's Table on Netflix, documentary series about chefs. And it's kind of like that, because that is quite inspiring about how creative they are with their dishes and stuff like that, and how they really... It's all about how they struggle to get where they are, and more about the chefs and the food. And you do watch it and you come out going, I really like that line about how you've just got to keep on pushing yourself. In the meantime, all I've done all day is watch documentaries and not done anything.
Well, it seems... It's like, if I watch stuff on Netflix, as opposed to dicking around on the internet, I feel like I'm being productive.
Yeah.
That's a modern thing,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Stuff like, I'll tell you what is getting me annoyed at the minute.
What's that?
Have you seen these adverts on the tube for Mubi, it's called? M-U-B-I?
Yes, I've seen those adverts.
Furious about them.
Why?
What kind of an idiot? For those of you who haven't seen the advert,
they pick a movie for you.
They pick a movie every day.
Yep.
And it's there for 30 days and then it goes.
Yeah.
And you pay £5 a month.
To have a bespoke movies recommended to you by the experts.
Awful. Awful. Netflix has so many movies on it.
I know, it is bad. And actually,
and they don't disappear after 30 days. And it's only like a couple of quid extra than this movie thing. And also, on the posters, it's all like... The films they're doing is like Old Boy. I've seen Old Boy. And it's on Netflix, actually.
Yeah.
Amelie. It's like, that's not...
Bit like when you went
Donnie Darko or something. Everyone knows that they're like interesting films.
Well, it's like the first week of university where you would meet someone who'd go, I'm actually into music you haven't heard of. I like Jeff Buckley. Everyone likes Jeff Buckley, get over yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
You might have been the interesting guy at your school who liked Jeff Buckley, but everyone likes him.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're like. They're going, hey, have you watched Amelie? Everyone watched Amelie.
Yeah, that big, massive studio release.
Yeah, we all saw that.
Of course we did.
So that's annoying. No one signed up to it. I'm sure they're a bunch of nice small-time businessmen. Don't maybe.
Yeah, just have a friend.
Yeah.
Chat to you, just talk to a friend and say, what have you seen recently that you've enjoyed?
Yeah.
Get them to recommend it.
Watch that and don't have it for just 30 days. That's the thing. It's only for 30 days. For $5.99, you can just buy a DVD.
Yeah, but you couldn't buy 30 DVDs, which is effectively what they're doing.
You couldn't buy 30 DVDs, that's right. But...
but I mean, who's honestly watching 30 films a month?
Who's going to watch a film every day?
I'm not a shut-in.
No.
I've got a life.
Yeah, as we've already discussed about how much you listen to Comedian's Comedian.
That's true.
Here's the Saint Pepsi track.
Okay,
and we'll see if...
let's go for it.
It swings any bells. Here we go. It's called Interlude, which is a good name, isn't it? Interlude. Here we go.
Khaki, I mean, she's not a mafia bride. Yeah, will you help me out?
Well, she is a lovely one.
I think I got it. I think it is Everyone Says I Love You.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
What is that going to cost me?
Is that Edward Norton speaking there?
Oh, it might be, actually.
If it's Edward Norton, I think it is Everyone Says I Love You.
That sounds like Norton, doesn't it?
Well,
but it sounds like Norton doing a Woody Allen impression.
Yeah, because every lead character in a Woody Allen movie has to basically do an impression of him. I reckon 95% certain that's Everyone Says I Love You. We can Google it in a second.
That does sound about right. That sounds like Ed Norton.
I think Edward Norton, I think he's getting married to Drew Barrymore.
Lovely.
Because it was his musical. Back when musicals weren't, you know, they were obviously enjoying a resurgence now, but Woody Allen was like, no one makes musicals anymore. I'm going to make a musical and I'm going to cast people who I like but can't necessarily sing or dance. So it's really good because all this... like Edward Norton can't sing or dance, but does his best job doing it.
Yeah.
The only person who wouldn't sing for the film was Drew Barrymore.
Okay.
And so he dubbed her voice with someone else who couldn't sing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She wouldn't sing because she thought her voice was too bad. He's like, well, I'm just going to get someone else who can't sing.
How do you like that?
Yeah. That's so, you know.
Trivia for you?
Yes.
Les Miserables. No, not Les Miserables. Sweeney Todd, the Tim Burton.
The
film.
Demon Barber at Fleet Street.
Yeah. So the Tim Burton one. When they were filming it, they were all singing to their pre-recorded tracks. They'd all recorded the vocals already, and they were miming along to it. Apart from one person for one song, and he went behind Tim Burton's back to sort it out as well. He went to the sound... My friend worked on the sound crew.
Really?
So this guy went round and said, don't put my song on. I'm just going to actually sing it. I'm going to properly do it. And that was Sacha Baron Cohen.
Really?
Yeah. He did. He's the only one who actually sang... like live on the set.
That's great.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Why did he do that? Why did he not want to? Because he wanted to make it.
I think he just wanted to be in it in the moment and properly do it and deliver the.
Well, it works. It works perfect because he's also in Les Mis as well.
He
and
is,
that's what they did in Les Mis. They made them sing live.
Yes.
Sort of. Yeah. Rather than
maybe that's why he got the part in Les Mis. Who knows?
It was his audition tape.
They were like, he already did it. He's the only one who's already done it.
He's got the skills.
He actually originated this style of...
singing live.
Yeah, singing live.
I don't think he did.
No one's ever sung live before Cohen.
No, he was the guy. He was. That's why he's playing Freddie Mercury in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he invented live singing.
Were you optimistic about that, Freddie Mercury?
Well, I like Queen up to a point, but I'm not.
Absolutely.
I don't think they are the band that, you know. I don't have a sort of Kenny Everett love of Queen. You know, and he played when the day Bohemian Rhapsody came out, he played it 3 times.
Great.
Yeah, on his show. He couldn't believe it. And that's most of the show done, isn't it? Come on, Kenny Everett.
It's
pull your finger out. I think it will be. I think fascinating stories.
Yeah.
Dwarves with cocaine on their heads.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely horrifying, but. Kind of compelling.
Yeah, but so, it's the kind of stories you want to hear.
Yeah, and he didn't, because Sacha Baron Cohen left for a while, left the production, because he wanted to take it one way, and then the estate wanted to be a bit more sort of loving, and now he's back on. He may even be directing it now.
Really?
But I think so.
Imagine that. So you walk away from a project and then you get to run the whole thing.
This is what he does. He calls people's bluff.
Yeah. We should all be...
I don't think it would
work out for me if I call people's bluff all the time.
Yeah, I think if I walked on projects, they'd go, fine.
Yep.
Great, we'll get
someone
else.
We're going to get Chico in. And that is a joke that...
That's a reference to something we were talking about before the show began.
Off air. Right, we're gonna put Matthew Cosby's iPod on shuffle now. Let's see what the first song is. Oh, Jimmy Eat World.
Oh, Jimmy Eat World. What a classic. Bleed American.
Jimmy Eat World, hear you me.
Not a dry eye. Not a dry eye in the studio.
In the country.
Yeah. So again, we were saying this.
Yeah.
Quite a relaxed song, quite a sort of chill out song for quite an upbeat album.
It is a dancey album.
You know, by the way, do stop me if I'm just being, because this is, it's because I haven't really seen anyone this weekend.
Yes.
You're the first person I've seen. So I'm just going to keep dropping bits of meaningless trivia at you.
I think you know me well enough now to know that that is exactly why I got you on the show, Cosby.
So originally the album was released, was called Bleed American.
Yes.
Then they changed the name.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
No, and I've always... I didn't know they changed it. I always...
They retitled it the eponymous Jimmy Eat World. They just called it
Yeah, because I was always just like, I don't know what that album's called because I had heard two different... Yeah. But.
And now it's back to being called Bleed American. Like, if you look it up on Spotify, it's called Bleed American. Weirdly, they thought it was... It was a post 9/11. It was a post 9/11 thing.
Right.
A bit like they took off on the re-release of Is This It? They took off New York City Cops.
Right. Okay.
Because everyone loved the Cops so much, they thought maybe putting, you know, maybe invoking blood and America together might be a problematic right. song.
Jimmy Eat World.
Jimmy Eat World. There. Very sensitive.
That emo fans. I don't know, sure. That is the one place you don't want to, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
The emo kids probably would. Would kick off about
I mean,
that.
They're on the verge of tears anyway.
Yeah.
So don't,
yeah. No need to put that kind of imagery in their head.
I got into a big emo phase. Big emo fan. Not the kind of like My Chemical Romance or the bands that are sort of described as emo.
Yeah.
Which I really can't. But then, I've got no time for.
So you were like me then, because like, we liked what we considered emo.
Yeah.
Jimmy Eat World and the Get Up Kids and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then, when My Chemical Romance were like all over MTV and people were saying this is emo, we were like, this is not emo.
No, but emo is not wearing long fingerless gloves that are purple and black striped and a bit of eye makeup. I used to go to gigs that were like local emo bands would play in Canterbury when I was at university, and it was genuinely, they were all about like, they would play songs, like incredibly emotive, like weepy songs, and then they would pass the microphone around the room and people could tell like sad stories.
Yeah,
it was incredible. They were incredible gigs. Also, like, people would grab the microphone and go, my mum is a smoker and I'm really worried about her, and then pass the mic. It was brilliant.
Do you ever get past the mic? Did they ever pass the mic to
no,
you?
No, I'd always step back because I'm too happy-go-lucky to be. I was standing at the back pretending not to smile. But I thought, you could never imagine that happening at a My Chemical Romance gig.
No.
It's just people punching each other.
Yeah, it's just...
I would imagine.
There's pretending.
They're pretending to feel stuff.
But then, emo originally was not what we consider it as either. So, like, but there was a whole generation before us.
Who, like, Fugazi were considered it like a, you know, like an emo, well, you know, proto-emo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, originally, like, in the very beginning, it was pretty much just hardcore music.
Yes.
Was emo. The more it progressed, the softer it got.
Because it was called, isn't emo, it's emotional hardcore.
Yeah.
Isn't that the full title of it? We're going deep into the music here, aren't we?
We're here to examine things that other people don't dare examine.
don't dare think about.
Yeah, exactly.
We're thinking so you don't have to.
That Jimmy Eat World album is one of the few albums that I got my mum into.
Really?
She loves it. And I'm one of the people who don't really, if I get my mum into something, it's not embarrassing. I'm like, yeah, cool, my mum likes this now.
My mum, weirdly, has carried on with Bonnie Prince Billy longer than I have.
Ah.
So like, when Bonnie Prince Billy brings out a new album, she'll know about it before I do. So when I go around for like Sunday dinner, she'll be like, have you heard the new Bonnie Prince Billy? I was like, oh, no, I haven't really kept up with Will Upton, but yeah.
You heard that, you will have heard it. Who's the song by that's about seeing Will Oldham on a train?
Jeffrey Lewis.
Great song.
Hell of a song.
If this wasn't a shuffle show, we'd play it.
We'd definitely pop it on right now. We'd
definitely play it. What a great song. But yeah, for people, it's called something. Something about...
The name of a train, because he's on the train, isn't he?
He's on the
thinks
train.
Thinks he sees Will Oldham.
Thinks he sees him.
Yeah.
And he tries. It's like us listening to Comedian's Comedian and watching the Chef programme, is that he sees another artist and goes, he'll tell me what I need to do.
All the secrets
and how to
there.
Be better.
Yeah.
And then the guy instead sexually abuses him.
Yeah.
From what I remember.
But then whispers something into his ear.
Whispers, artists are pussies.
That's right.
So he says to him, artists are pussies, and then leaves him on the tracks.
He's got a point.
I mean, we all have it coming. I guess the message of that song is stop whining about how to be creative.
Yeah, yeah, just be creative.
Absolute pussy. And then like, even if you go, no, we're not. And you go, well, let's go back to those emo gigs that Crosby went to and see how much you think artists might be.
Yeah.
I mean, might be big tough guys.
Artists and their audience. And their audience, yeah.
Absolutely. Right, let's alternate back to my one and see what it throws up. I've had to because I put that other one on earlier. I put the interlude song on. I had to go out of the shuffle, so now I'm going into it again. So we're now going to see if lightning strikes twice and it plays the exact same Saint Pepsi song from earlier. I doubt it will. We'll see. No, it's Sebado. The sweet sounds of Sebado.
I mean, we can file that under unlistenable, can't we?
Yeah, I mean, I
like Sebado. They've got some cracking songs. Yeah. I like a bit of folk implosion.
Yeah,
I like his stuff he did with Dinosaur Jr.
Yeah.
But that is him. That is him messing around on our time.
Absolutely pulling one over on us.
Yeah,
and not caring. I mean, imagine doing that in the studio and going, "Yeah, we'll put that on the album."
He also had a Sebado offshoot band, Centrado, didn't he?
Did he?
He must have gone like that. Isn't like that is how does he go like that's not an offshoot song? That definitely goes on the main Sebado. How did you pick... What's that song called?
That song is called Eric.
From what...
it's called Part 2, Eric.
Oh, there's a Part 1? Well, that's the reason it doesn't make any sense. We hadn't seen the prequel.
It's like if you watched, Mighty Ducks 2.
Exactly.
D2, the Mighty Ducks.
It would make no sense.
You'd be like, what is going on? Why are they playing hockey? That's just... Yeah, it's from Bubble and Scrape, which has some very good songs in it, but I think that one.
That's not one of them.
He's just having a laugh.
I mean, there is a dignity to having 10 tracks on an album, Lou Barlow. There's a dignity to saying, look, we've got 10 corkers, let's not pad it out to 17 or 18.
Tell it to all the rappers in the world.
Absolutely. Your skits aren't that great.
Yeah, you don't.
I know skits.
Yeah.
If there's one thing I know, skits, and yours aren't that great.
Because they're not good. They're misogynistic and short.
And also, under-rehearsed.
Oh, yeah. Clearly, you and your mate just going, we'll just riff something.
Yeah. With the possible exception of the Wu-Tang Clan's torture thing, which
goes on for a long time.
I mean, it goes on for a long time. It's full of top lols, though.
I mean, full of top lols. It's horrible. One of the most horrible things you'll hear.
Absolutely, yeah.
The spiked bat.
Going to sew your arsehole up and keep feeding you and feeding you and feeding you.
Feeding you and feeding you. Which then, made it into the film 7.
It did.
So there you go. I mean, Wu-Tang did write that film, to be fair. But yeah, they didn't like that. I mean, I feel that this week is the one I shouldn't make any jokes like that because we're doing
so much trivia.
So much trivia that people will go, Wu-Tang Clan wrote 7. The set 7 chambers. Which they did not. That's a shame. Sebado's quite... See, I was saying to you, it's a cool band to come up. It makes me look cool that Sebado is on my iPod.
Yeah, kudos. But come on, who's honestly listening to that?
No.
Lou Barlow... Lou Barlow stories.
Yes.
My favourite firing story, because he got fired from Dinosaur Jr.
Yeah.
He's back in them now. Back in Dinosaur Jr. now. They're
congratulations.
Great together.
Yeah.
But he got fired because Jay Maskus said, "Oh, by the way, we're breaking up the band."
Yeah.
And then Lou is walking down the street, having the band's broken up. He's walking down the street a few weeks later, sees a poster for Dinosaur Jr. playing in the town. He goes, "What's going on?" He goes to Jay. He's like, "Yeah, we weren't really breaking up the band. Just didn't know how to fire you." Me and Murph are going to carry on.
Great,
you're not in the
great
band
way
anymore.
To fire someone.
Yeah, it's a great way to fire somebody.
In that Chef's Table documentary,
yes,
one of the chefs gets fired from a job in for the best bread maker in all the land, and he gets an apprenticeship, and he doesn't put any salt in the bread.
Oh no!
And he just says he's watched all the loaves just rise and then go completely flat, and he got fired.
Oh!
But then he built himself up from there. Imagine that.
Well, that's exactly what happened. Lou Barlow gets fired. He starts Sebado. He creates gorgeous music like that.
Just beautiful tracks like that no
rise
one can
and
deny.
Rise like a good loaf of bread.
And then fall flat.
when we slag him off, aren't
we? Yeah, we just go, hold on a second, mate. I know what you're doing there. It's like, our friend Josh Widdicombe went to see... a band... I can't remember who it was, actually, so this is absolutely pointless. So someone like... Someone like Sebado, but it wasn't Sebado.
Right.
But they just did. They ended their set with 20 minutes of feedback and stuff, and he absolutely loved it. But I can't imagine.
Oh, was it?
Don't know if I would love it that much.
Was it My Bloody Valentine?
It might have been My Bloody Valentine.
I have a feeling he went to see My Bloody Valentine, but that's, again, a band very cool. Can't really listen to them.
No.
Loveless.
Yeah.
I've heard it's very good, but it makes me feel physically sick because it's so... It's like they've got a vinyl record and they keep just touching the side of it to slightly slow it down.
Right, yeah, ooh, yeah, yeah.
Makes me feel like I'm on a ferry.
Yeah, which you famously don't like.
I hate ferries.
Being on ferries. You
sorry,
really
P&O.
Yeah.
I'm not, down to the last two for that Rob Brydon gig.
Yeah.
I stupidly went public with my hatred of ferries and then I gave it to Brydon.
I was on a ferry as a child, but I didn't...
Oh, mate, I've told you how much I like... You can tell me a ferry anecdote now.
I didn't know what a ferry was. I just thought I was on a boat. I was quite young.
Yeah.
And so my memory of it... So as I grew up, I was just like, oh, once I was on a boat that had a ball pool in it and a games room and stuff. And so my memory of this place was just like, I was on a fancy boat.
A fancy boat that's got a car park underneath it.
Yeah, I just thought it was on a fancy... So even when I learnt what ferries were, that memory never changed. So I'd always say it to people.
How often were you telling people about the time you were on a ferry?
Because it was one of my favourite childhood memories. We went and watched Hook on the ferry.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I remember just... Because I didn't expect it, I thought I was on a boat. So I'm sitting there, my parents come along and went, come on, come with us. And we just walked into a cinema. And I was like, I couldn't believe it.
It was like something out of The Wolf of Wall Street.
I was like, what is this? And then Hook came on, which was the film I wanted to see in the whole world at that point.
So you thought it was a boat that had been created just for you?
I just didn't know what had happened. I thought it was a dream. Because this shouldn't be here, and yet it is. So I guess I'll just watch Hook. And they didn't even tell us what the film was. I remember, like, the Universal, whatever it was made by, logo coming up, and my mum saying, can you guess what film it is? And I said, Hook, optimistically. And she was like, yep. And I was like, you've got to be joking.
That's incredible.
I can't believe it. And and then I learnt what ferries were as I got older, and yet still didn't change that memory to be like, I was on a ferry. I still kept it as I was on a boat that somehow had a cinema on it, and I've never seen it since. And then I remember saying it to some adults when I was an adult, and they went, you were on a ferry. And I had to go, oh, I was on a ferry. I knew that.
That's my childhood memory destroyed.
Yeah.
You've ruined it.
Yeah.
It's not so much of a story now, is it?
I was just on a ferry.
Oh.
But then, you know, as far as I was concerned as a kid, that is what happened. So,
I mean, if we could pick songs now, you'd obviously play some Roxy Music. Speaking of ferries, Roxy,
this show this week, I feel like we brought up a lot of songs. So we could have done the show with, like, you know, we don't know what we're going to play, and we're just going to talk until we find a track. And then, so that's another show
that's
idea,
another show.
Amanda. That's another show
we
idea.
We are inventing formats.
Talk until you find a track. For now, let's go back to the iPod Shuffle format and put Matthew Crosby's iPod back on Shuffle. Let's see what it throws up for us. Oh. Guns N' Roses.
Oh my goodness.
What we've got here.
Guns N' Roses there. We're about a quarter of the way through that song.
It's an epic.
It is. Well, but by Guns N' Roses standards, that's...
No, it's pretty...
Normal length, right?
Yeah, it's a jingle.
It is, yeah, a little... that's his ringtone, I believe.
Yeah, that's from a double album as well, so they really give you value for money, except for the fact that they don't really ever release records. They do it about once every sort of 10 years or so, 15 years.
And who's even in it now?
Well, it's Axl. It's just Axl. It's very much... They're very much the Simply Red of hard rock. It's basically a front man and a bunch of session musicians. I can't even tell you who's still... Is it Bumblefoot? Is Bumblefoot still in there?
I've never heard Bumblefoot of Bumblefoot.
Bumblefoot might be the guitarist.
Buckethead is the
Buckethead
one thing,
was there. I mean, that's basically... It's if you've got a comic name, we'll put you in the band.
You're in the band, or... I mean, a man playing the guitar with a KFC bucket on his head is...
a legend?
This is brilliant, isn't it?
It's fantastic. You know, you've got to have a gimmick, and he's not going to be the best guitarist in the world, but he's certainly going to be a memorable guitarist.
And it's got to be unpleasant in that bucket as well.
I'm going to level with you. I don't think it's an actual KFC bucket.
What do you think it is?
I think it's customised. I mean, they live in Hollywood. They could probably get, Industrial Light and Magic to knock one up.
So he's gone, I don't want to put a real bucket on my head. It'll be greasy.
Yep.
Can someone make me one special because I want to wear a KFC bucket on my head on stage?
Yeah, you must have. Have you never had a prop made for you?
I haven't until this year. I'm getting stuff done for this show.
You can't, no spoilers. You can't tell us what they are.
Oh no, it's not a big thing. It's just for visually. I want everything to be maroon. Apart from, I don't want any backdrop or anything, but like the mic stand, mic lead, microphone, and stool that I've got on stage, I want to be all the same red wine colour.
Are you going to come on to Moves Like Jagger?
No, but I should. I should do.
I mean,
we all know that I should do.
The problem, yeah, because it'll be a thing that, you know, most people will probably work it out eventually, but it's a little.
Yeah, but you're a fan of trivia and facts, and so I think if I walked onto that, you can appreciate some people would go, they're more of a burgundy, really, and that doesn't really work. they don't look maroon. I think you'll find
that's true. Yeah,
and I'm also wearing entire.
What are you wearing? What, like a
red wine cords shirt and tie.
The paisley tie?
The paisley, maroon paisley tie.
That's great.
So it's all, I look very stupid this
Why
year.
Why have you, what's the thinking behind the maroon?
I got the tie and so I'd already got that and I was going to wear that at gigs.
Yeah.
And some gigs I'd have to wear it with, I was wearing it with whatever shirt I had on that day. So sometimes I would wear the maroon shirt and those gigs were just more fun because I looked worse.
Yeah.
So it was fun to, and I found though they went better. So then I started wearing maroon cords as well to complete it. And that was a lot of fun. And then I had a routine at the end where I kind of mistreat the mic stand a bit and the stool on stage and kind of like slam them a bit heavy handed with them.
Right.
And I thought, I'm going to have to buy my own of these because I don't know if every venue will let me just slam their mic stand around.
Of course.
So when I realised I had to get my own mic stand, I thought, well, what kind am I going to get? I thought, oh, I'll get another maroon one.
So painted it? Have you painted it maroon?
No, there's this company who does it.
That's incredible.
So they're gonna paint them all for me. And then
So you're going to have your own maroon... Is it going to be your own maroon mic as well?
Yeah, the microphone, the lead... The stand and the stool
will
be exactly the same colour. So pretty exciting.
Fantastic.
Yeah, but there's no So
and you don't mention it at all in the show?
Don't mention it, no. I like to think that some people will think there's symbolism behind it, but there's not. It's just because it just happened organically.
Well, I mean, you're a man who's emotionally marooned, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's sort of what it is.
That's been said.
That's kind of the subtext of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm emotionally adrift.
Yeah.
Let's see.
No man is an island apart from James Acaster.
Yeah.
Hence the maroon.
That would actually be a good show title. I'd like to call the show title.
No man's an island apart from James Acaster.
Yeah.
That's a great title.
That would be really fun.
But haven't you got don't you stick to the one word?
Not strict. I'm very open to calling them whatever. It's just the one words have been... I've just liked them recently, you know, over the last four shows.
Our friend,
I've liked having them as well.
Our friend David O'Doherty has got a great Edinburgh title. Now, yeah. I think I'm hopefully I'll get this right. It's we are all born in the gutter, but some of us are staring at David O'Doherty. That's a great title.
It's great.
Yeah.
I remember one year he did something. It Seize the David O'Doherty?
Yeah, yeah.
Or
he's done. Yeah, yeah.
So great.
Seize the David O'Doherty, yeah.
Somewhere over the David O'Doherty?
He's done that, yeah, yeah.
Great names. Anyone who doesn't get the why, that's funny.
Absolutely.
That's what you want to do with a show title.
Yeah.
Anyone who doesn't get why, that's funny, won't come.
I can't do it now, unfortunately, but when I did my show at Mac 2 years ago, I called it An Hour with Brill Crosby.
Great.
But unfortunately now there's just connotations with Bill Cosby that you can't...
Of course.
You can't do anymore.
Very sad.
It's really sad.
Awful, isn't it? I mean, you know, obviously it's awful.
It's a bit like your fairy story.
Yeah, you grew up and then you realised.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I used to listen to... he was one of the first comics I got into.
That's
cassette tape of him, listened to it all the way through a French holiday, kept on listening to it on repeat.
That album, To Russell, My Brother, Who I Slept With, is the... one of the best comedy albums of all time. It's just incredible. That second half where he's just talking about what it's like to share a bed with your little brother, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's basically like it's like an episode of a TV show. It's like 25 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's just him telling a story of, you know, the story takes longer to tell than it actually does to play out. It's so brilliant. It's such a... Oh, dear, we've mentioned 9/11. We mentioned Bill Cosby. It's both times...
Hard-hitting. Hard-hitting. You had Guns N' Roses just now.
Yes.
Have you read Slash's autobiography?
I haven't.
That's got a lot of good stories in it.
I bet it does.
But Axl Rose especially. Apparently, once Axl Rose was staying at Slash's house for a bit. He didn't have his own place. So he had to stay over. And Slash brought his grandmother home. And he said, Axl, this is my grandmother. And Axl just looked at her and said, fuck you.
Said
fuck you to her. And everyone was like, what has happened? And then later on, Slash is driving Axl to the gig. And he went, hey, look, man, that wasn't cool earlier on where you said fuck you to my grandmother. She's really upset.
Yeah.
She's from a different time to us. You don't say that kind of stuff to people.
Well, I mean, it's, whatever time you're from, it's still not, it's still not great.
It's still impolite. But I think he was trying to be as nice as he could. You know, you're going to need to apologise later on.
Yeah.
And Axl just didn't say anything. And they drive along and then just like 5 minutes in silence. And then Axl Rose just undoes his seatbelt, opens the door and just jumps out the car. And apparently all Slash saw in his rearview mirror was Axl Rose's body tumbling down the road and then stop motionless and then get up and just run away. just ran away.
Rather than apologise to an old woman,
yeah,
he'd sooner roll out of a moving car. That's why he's such a genius. You don't get pop stars like that anymore.
Yeah. He's clearly sitting there going, this guy doesn't get me.
He doesn't understand what I'm about. I say F you to old ladies.
Yeah.
That's Axl Rose.
Yeah.
my name is an anagram of oral sex. That's what I've decided to do.
Is that what his name is? Is that why he's called that?
Yeah.
That's clever.
Is it though? Is it clever? Or is it the sort of thing you would do as a child and go, yeah, I'm going to have a name that's secretly... I mean, he might as well have called himself Oral Sex.
Yeah. You might as well have called himself
Captain Blowjob. And you would have been like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
we've got Bumblefoot, we've got Captain Blowjob, we've got Slash.
Captain Blowjob.
That's how I think of him.
BJ is making a comeback now. People are saying BJ Moore again.
Are they?
Very funny, isn't it, saying BJ?
Yeah, BJ. It's a bit like Handy J. I like...
Never heard that
have
before.
Have you never heard of Handy J?
That sounds like a kids' TV presenter.
like Mr. Tumble.
Yeah, yeah.
You could imagine if Mr. Tumble's name was actually Handy J. Yeah. No one would bat an eyelid.
It's Handy J.
Handy J.
What's it? Well, that's what they do, kids' TV. Dick and Dom.
Oh, yeah.
In the bungalow. Full of
little
absolute
innuendos.
Absolute filth.
Yeah. But they do it to, you know.
Absolute filth.
As long as you don't actually swear.
Yeah.
It's fine.
They had a game. Well, they definitely started from the name and worked backwards.
Yeah.
It was a stupid... Because the game involved them. They had to wear wings that were... and these wings were hooked up. There's a tube that went from the wings into this, like, receptacle. And they had to flap their wings loads.
Yeah.
And basically what it did was it pumped water. The more they flapped, the more it pumped water through this tube into the receptacle. And it was meant to be them sweating. It was meant to look like sweat. And then the game was called In a Sweaty Flap.
Right, yeah.
That's what it was called.
They know what they're doing.
They knew exactly what they were doing there. There's no way someone came up with that idea and then went, oh, we could call it that. Ah. That came from... They went, what's the worst thing we could call a kid's game?
In a Sweaty Flap.
We'll call it that.
I remember on Blue Peter they used the expression wizard sleeve during a Halloween. They were making Halloween cakes and a guy reached over and said, oh, got a bit of a sticky wizard sleeve there, because his sleeve went in the cake. And I didn't even know. The only reason I knew it was I was watching it with my uni mates, and one of them laughed. Yeah. And I was like, what's that? And they said, well, it's a euphemistic phrase.
It's the worst thing in the world. That's what that is. But like, also, there's no reason for him to say wizard.
He was, yeah.
So he knew what he was doing.
Because it was Halloween. They sort of like that was kind of his game. But the thing is though, what do the producers do in that instance? Do the producers afterwards? Because that's going out live.
Yep.
Do the producers go, come on, mate, it's kids' TV.
Don't do that.
Or, I mean, what, you know?
Nah, you've met enough TV producers. That's probably their idea.
They loved it.
They went, try and get wizard sleeve into it today. Be a laugh. Try and say that at some point. That's why it's those little games, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, though,
showbiz games.
Sometimes it got reported in the, because Anthea Turner said when Bonnie the dog was, she said she was talking about Bonnie the dog, and Bonnie the dog was sat like on the floor, and she had her legs either side of Bonnie the dog,
yes,
as you might do if you're sat on a sofa with a dog by
you.
And she said, Bonnie the dog, who's currently between my legs at the moment, blah 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 blah, and it got reported in the papers. And I think that's reading stuff into, you know.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely.
If you were saying, "Hello, kids, this is Bonnie the dog. She's between my legs at the moment." Oh, actually, now I say it out loud, it does sound kind of bad.
No, But if you say "Hello, kids," this is Bonnie the dog. She's between my legs at the moment. I think anything with "Hello, kids" at the front.
Yeah, I think "Hello, kids" is the bit that ruins
I think Blue
it.
Peter presenters never say "Hello, kids." I would wager not a single Blue Peter presenter ever in the history of that show has ever gone "Hello, kids."
Yeah,
because but Blue Peter's meant to be. Yeah, you feel grown up.
You feel grown up watching it. It's basically the news.
Yeah, it's basically, yeah, I've taken an interest in
current affairs
and what's going on.
You know what, that's actually...
Gardening.
That's true, because I'd never seen the One show until quite recently.
Right.
It's Blue Peter, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's Blue Peter, but yeah. Adults can watch it.
Yeah,
adults. Like, it's the same level of, you know, like, we're going to go to a factory that makes, you know, grinds up grain or whatever.
Yeah.
Why?
Didn't want... I mean, there were so many programmes... And I'd say Blue Peter and Newsround were the front runners for this category for me, were that I was watching simply because I was a kid and I wanted to watch TV.
Yes, definitely.
And I was... The shows that... I can't remember what time, 5:35 or whatever Blue Peter was on, or something like that.
Yeah.
It was at that slot, and that was three times a week when I was a kid. It was Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And I would really look forward to Tuesday and Thursday when there was something else on at that time slot.
But yeah, you just like want to be sat in front of the telly.
Did you ever watch Mud?
No, what was Mud?
It's brilliant. It's the time travellers, but like a right bunch of like a proper rogues gallery. There's just a bunch of misfits and some older people, some kids, and quite dark and quite mean to each other. They weren't nice people.
Did one of them have pink hair?
I think one of them might have had pink hair.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think because they went into I mean, this is going to be 5 seconds of an episode. but one of them went into like a thing that, like, instead of a shower in the future, you have a thing that just, you go into it and you come out and you're completely clean. And she went in, she had pink hair and she came out. And because the dye wasn't natural, it took the dye out of her hair. Yeah.
Good joke, actually.
Not a bad joke.
It's funny that you remember... For ages, and the show is called The Odyssey. I know what it is now, but for ages, I was just like me and some friends were like, there was a show where a kid went into a coma, and the whole series was his dream.
Wow!
While he was in a coma, and it was really amazing, really, and it was all the people from his real life were in the dream, and what was happening in the real world actually was mirrored
sort of bled
in
bled
his
into the, yeah.
It was really great, and for ages, I was like, I didn't know what it was called, much like a ferry in many ways. It's called The
Odyssey.
You weren't
paying a tremendous amount of attention during your childhood, were you?
I didn't think I'd need to.
It's true.
I thought this won't come up again.
There's no test. There's no test when you get to 30.
As a kid, you don't have any long game.
No.
You're just like, I'm just taking everything as it comes, having a blast, and then someone goes, what was that programme called with the kid in the coma? Oh, man.
No,
I just enjoyed it. I didn't get what it was called.
I don't know if you're younger than me.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember. Did you ever watch kids' TV shows that were German TV shows that had been just badly dubbed in English?
No.
They showed them on children's BBC.
Right.
So they'd be like, this is... There's one called, I think, called The Adventures of Tim Tyler. Adventures of Tyler? Tim Tyler? But it was a guy who... And again, dark. Really dark.
Right.
One of the first episodes, a guy kills his dad, just to make a point.
Gosh.
Really dumb.
Just to make a point.
Yeah, because, well, the thing is, he's got the best laugh in the world.
Yeah.
Everyone loves his laugh.
Yeah.
So this evil supervillain guy goes, I want to buy your laugh.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not going to sell the laugh to you. Because it was dubbed, it was really, all weird intonations. I'm not going to sell the laugh to you. He goes, well, if you give me your laugh, then I will make sure that every bet you make comes true. And so he says, I don't want to do it. He goes, well, look at your dad who's up there in that glider. Look at the glider go into the ground and explodes. And but it was the weirdest thing about it was that this
glider.
This was the 80s, but they still weren't, you know, we were still watching knocked off German TV. Was Britain not producing enough good...
Well, this is the thing, isn't it?
TV shows. We had to watch German knockoffs that had been dubbed.
Look at the state we're in now, mate. It's true. TV.
It's true.
Remember Tennant on TV?
Yeah.
And he would make fun of what people were making abroad.
Yeah.
We're making those shows now.
We're now, yeah.
That's what we do now.
Oh, isn't it funny, these Japanese game shows? Oh, we're doing it now.
No.
And it's on its bloody third, fourth, fifth series.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy. well, that's me. We've sorted out the world.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Sorted out television.
Yeah, I'm glad. Right, we're going to go back onto my iPod now, put it on shuffle and see what the song is. Oh, here we go. And Animal Collective.
I mean, more unlistable nonsense from the golden iPod of James Acaster there.
At the end.
Do you listen to any things that are called actual songs?
No.
Listen, where's your Jimmy Eat World? Where's your Guns N' Roses?
That's why I get you on. That's why I get guests on, because they've got to break up the noisescape.
An issue of Kerrang! Magazine walking around.
Yeah. It's very noisy at the end there. That brilliant album, though, Animal Collective. I don't know if you've got that album or if you've heard it.
Is that the one that has the cover that's like loads of little leaves?
No, although that is a good album as well.
But also, if you look at that on a computer, that cover, looks like it's moving.
Yeah, Optical Illusion.
Looks like a GIF.
So it's all like blip, 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 moving around.
It's very clever. It's a lot of fun.
Very clever. They're clever boys.
They've put some thought into it.
They wear that on their sleeve.
They've put some thought into it. Because obviously album cover artwork is dying out, really, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
It's dying out. But they've thought, well, look, rather than bemoan the fact it's not going to be out on a 12-inch vinyl, we're going to use the medium.
Yeah. Well, it's like Tool do that with each one of their albums. Tool, they did one where... it was 3D. Like there was some glasses attached to it, like
a little red one and a little green one.
It was two like clear lenses, but circular. Oh. But like on a bit, but attached to the actual album, and then you hold up so you open it. It's all cardboard. It's all together. It's not like a pull-out sleeve.
Right.
So you open it up. It's like a book, and you look at the book through these glasses, and all the images are like three-dimensional.
Wow.
Images. And they had that as one of their albums. And that was pretty... And also, you didn't expect it from clear lenses back then, either.
That's very impressive. Was that a vinyl or was that a CD?
CD. That was a CD.
Really? They went for it with the CD? Yeah.
And before that, they did their album Lateralis, I think it's called. And the inlay, so that the booklet, was just, like, all clear plastic with different parts of the... So different layers of the human body drawn in it.
That's great.
So it looks like a full person, and with each page you turn, you strip down until you get to the skeleton at the end.
That's really good.
That looked pretty cool.
I've got a copy of Led Zepp 3.
Yeah.
That has that thing where, it's like inside the cover. The cover's got little holes cut in it.
Yeah.
And you can sort of turn a little dial at the side that makes things go past.
Yeah.
So like a little Zeppelin goes past.
Yeah, lovely.
It's great. The best example of that, though... Oh, an album I'm not a fan of is Ladies and Gentlemen, We're Floating in Space by Spiritualized.
Yes.
They had a sort of kind of pharmacy theme, a medical theme, and they released their CD in a blister pack.
Oh.
So you could literally pop it out like a paracetamol. And they even did a special edition where they released like 13 or 14 individual mini CDs, every track on a separate blister pack.
That's good.
That's a great idea, isn't it?
That is a really good idea, but the album's not good.
I'm not a fan of Spiritualized.
No.
I mean, they had I think Spaceman 3, which is the band they came from, I think had a song called Taking Drugs to Make Music to Take Drugs to. And I think that's kind of sums up, it's quite boring music made by quite boring people to be listened to while you're, enjoying something.
Yeah, I can't imagine you as much of a drugsman, a drug taker.
You've
probably done more drugs than I have. I've done zero.
Caffeine is a drug. I had a cup of coffee this morning, so...
That's my favourite thing from bands and stuff, whenever they get asked about drugs. They go, well, you take drugs every day.
Yeah.
You all take drugs.
Yeah, the media's a drug.
Sugar's a drug. Yeah, the media is a... You read the papers,
worst drug in the world. You're brainwashed, mate. That'll rot your brain. Forget the fact I'm doing meow meow all the time. That's what you should be worried about.
Oxygen's a drug.
Of course, we should say drugs are very dangerous, don't do them.
Yeah, don't do drugs at all.
It's very, very stupid. Absolute waste. Some of our greatest artists, we've lost them to drugs.
But it's glamorised a lot. We were saying about libertines earlier, and the media bloody loved the fact that he did loads of drugs.
They did. I remember reading an article where they followed him around, like, we're going to follow... They just called him the bloke from the libertines. Didn't even know he was called Pete Doherty at the time. We're going to follow the bloke from the libertines around as he... gets progressively more and more fucked up, and it's like that is extremely irresponsible because you're basically writing for kids.
Yeah,
the enemy is the enemy is for people who's just graduated out of smash hits. It's a bit like because I'm a massive Manic Street Preachers fan, love the Manic Street Preachers, but my God, they used to glamorize Richie Manic's self harm.
Yeah,
oh, it was absolutely irresponsible.
Yeah,
and I remember even as a kid who loved the Manics, and being the kind of age, age going, this probably isn't right.
Yeah.
Is it? That, you know, but, like, you love the fact he's carving things into his arm?
That's
Come
the thing,
on.
Isn't
he,
it?
He needs help.
Because obviously, like, old, like, back in the 60s and 70s or whatever, if you had, like, someone like Jim Morrison or whatever, people weren't going, okay, it's great, or oh, wow, this is crazy. It was more like, oh, he shouldn't. The people reporting the news back then were like, he should not be doing this. We don't approve of it.
Yeah.
And so everyone, you know, was, but, like, that was just him being this out of control. But now, if they can sell it, so oh, it becomes, yeah. You can't even be a drug addict or whatever and just, like, be that actual out of control thing. It just gets controlled and it becomes
that
this
becomes
product.
Your angle.
Yeah.
That becomes,
that's your thing now. You've got to keep doing it.
It was true of Amy Winehouse, didn't she?
Yeah.
She wrote songs, you know, Rehab.
Yeah.
It came, I was, where was I the other day? And Rehab came on and I thought, this just sounds terrible now.
Yeah.
You go like, ha ha, it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's her going, I'm fine, I'm all right. You're not, you're yeah. you're in serious trouble, and you're sort of writing songs about it.
Yeah.
But I mean, that said, it's like the old Bill Hicks joke of, like, if you don't, you know, if you don't like drugs, go and take all your records and burn them now, because, you know,
yeah.
all the bands you loved were really high. But
yeah,
I mean, come on, in moderation.
I think
Ringo Starr did a lot of drugs. He's still knocking around.
He's still peace and love. still watch that every week. I don't watch it every week, but I think you probably should watch that video, that YouTube clip every week.
Of what? Well, I don't know this. What?
When he wanted them to stop sending him the fan mail. Surely you've seen that.
No, I don't think so. This is incredible.
I can't believe this. All the trivia, you know.
And I haven't seen
one of the best YouTube videos in the world.
It better than McCartney's "You Can Do It Right Now, Please"?
It was the original. You know, it's like McCartney probably did "You Can Do It Right Now, Please" in order to, like, complete with right. peace and love. But it starts off on a real close up of Ringo's face.
What era?
This is like probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, okay, right.
And he's just looking at the camera, waiting for it, and it just pulls back really slowly, and then he's basically telling them, "Stop sending me fan mail, because I can't reply to it all." So he says, "As of such and such a day, I will no longer be reading fan mail." But he keeps on going, peace and love, all the time. And because every time he says peace and love, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
But then he goes, "Stop sending me fan mail, peace and love." And it's really great, really great. And it's one of the great YouTube videos.
I'll enjoy that.
We'll watch it. Let's watch it. Let's put on a song from your iPod.
Let's put on a song, yeah.
And in the meantime, we'll watch it. I was about to say iPod. It is Matthew's iPhone, and I have to turn on his channel and see a photo of his lovely wife.
Yeah.
Every time. Turn it on, and there's your wife. Where is she there?
Where is she in that photo?
Yeah.
Budapest.
Lovely.
No, tell her St. Petersburg.
Let's hear about both of those places,
Absolutely.
Though.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
After this next song. Oh, he's landed on his feet very well here, looking pretty cool. Tune Yards, Gangster. I mean, probably, the song's called Gangster, that's not me.
Yeah, that's not you, just
commenting on
doing
it.
A shout out at the end.
Yeah, very good.
Brap, brap, brap.
Very good song.
It's a great song, and I think that's given, yeah, you're right, it's given me a bit more kind of indie rock cred.
I mean, yeah, no one's going to slag you off for that,
no.
Are they? That's safe.
Yeah, you are absolutely safe. Pitchfork will not be looking down their nose at me.
Oh, Pitchfork.
Oh, Pitchfork.
Don't even get me started.
You're not a Pitchfork fan?
No, I don't like reading reviews, really, about music. I get very annoyed. I like film reviews.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but
maybe
I hate music reviews.
I don't know. Is it because you obviously don't like reading comedy reviews?
No.
Not a fan of... But is it because music is often like one person or two people or three people, whereas a film is like, here's a film of, like, yeah. you know, 1,000 people were involved in the making of it, isn't it?
Maybe it's the thing, yeah, where music's more... I mean, it's probably not more personal. I'm sure filmmakers would get pretty annoyed to hear me say that, but, like, I think music just seems to be this thing where, like, I think it's so subjective. It's,
yeah, absolutely.
So that I just want... I think if films, you can kind of go, like, yeah, that wasn't good, and I can kind of hack that a little bit more.
I guess so.
Maybe, but like, I mean,
but
yeah,
then some of the music I listen to is kind of badly made.
Yeah,
but that's what. Yeah, I suppose that's it, isn't it? Because you can listen to badly made music and it's still good. Whereas a badly made film, there's almost an element of technique you have to have.
Yeah,
in order to be good at it.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's, no, that's not necessarily true either, because there is sort of sloppy...
No, sloppy films.
Sloppy filmmaking that are brilliant. Like all the early John Waters movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Are brilliant.
Yeah.
But they're... That's the, it's yeah. a tricky one.
Very tricky.
I know what you mean, though. But you don't like... What about a real... Like,
Pitchfork, I just think it's very... Pitchfork...
Very sneery.
Very sneery and very like, as soon as something... They'll say something's brilliant, and as soon as it gets big, they'll say it's rubbish.
That's the enemy do the same thing as well. Like, yeah. build them up to knock them down.
Hate it.
They loved Suede so much.
Right.
That was, you know, like 1993, when that first album came out.
Yeah.
Suede were, you know, they were gods. And then then they absolutely, yeah, it's weird, but...
Yeah.
It's just taste, isn't it? They're just tastemakers.
Yeah. They get ready, like, here we go, this is the one when we... Yeah, destroy them.
This is the one where we take them down.
Think, who gets off on that? Who's waiting around?
Well, they love it, don't they? The rock journalists must. Although weirdly, I know what you mean about not reading reviews, but if there is a book written about working for the enemy, I will read it.
Right. Yeah.
I absolutely love. Like, I read Mark Ellen's book. I read Stuart McConey's book.
Yeah.
Read Andrew Collins' book. Love them. Absolutely love them.
Oh yeah. Well, stuff like that. I mean, it's definitely that's an interesting environment.
Yeah.
I don't want to read anything they've written, but I definitely would like to peer in and see what goes on in that industry and like in those workplaces and what kind of people end up drawn to that. I think that's fascinating.
I started buying the NME when we were on tour, the last tour we did, 2013. I started rebuying the NME to read in the car. I wasn't driving, just to be safe.
So people know.
Tom and Ben were doing the driving. I was reading the NME.
I trust Ben more.
Yeah. He's. What do you think Tom's going to drive around in a wacky way?
He's too distracted.
No, he's a very good, very competent driver, Tom Parry. Very competent driver. But I started reading The NME, and it's fascinating because I was reading. They did a 10th anniversary of Up the Bracket. That was one of the things they did. So I read all the original reviews of it and original interviews, and I thought, wow, this sounds really exciting.
Yeah.
And I listened to it, and it's still just as terrible as I remember it being. There's something about compelling journalism, like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I
like that, though. I do like, if someone's writing about something they love, I definitely enjoy reading that.
I also enjoy, because I love Everett True, who wrote for The Melody Maker in the 90s, big around the sort of, you know, he pushed Kurt onto the stage in the wheelchair at Reading Festival in 91, I think it was, when they headlined Reading Festival.
Yeah. And everyone sang Happy Birthday to Dave Grohl's mum.
Yeah! God, what a gig.
Yeah.
If only I hadn't been 11 years old, I would have been there.
Yeah.
Would definitely have been there. I had to read about it instead. But Everett True now writes a thing called Collapse Board.
Right.
And he writes the most, like, he absolutely lacerates bands.
Really?
But that's his thing.
Okay.
And I sort of read his stuff just because it's, like, he will do it so brilliantly.
Right, okay, yeah.
And also, like, he doesn't hate everyone, but he goes off people very quickly. So, he used to love the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and now he absolutely hates them.
Really?
And so he'll do everything, like, taking apart how bad their cover, the album covers look. Oh, it's great, it's really...
To be fair, I hear that, and I'll go, yeah, I'll probably agree with him there. I really like... Fever to Tell, I thought was a brilliant. I really loved that album.
Yeah,
and Bang EP
was great.
I have gone off them more as they've gone on. I still love Cameron O.
She's great.
I love her,
although very unreliable as a live band.
Really?
They if they're in a good mood, brilliant. One of the best live bands out there.
Yeah.
But if they're not, oh my god,
blimey! I mean, the Spike Jonze. I think it's called Tell Me What Rockers to Swallow, I think it's called.
Tell Me What?
Tell Me What Rockers to Swallow, or it's Tell Me What Poppers to Swallow, but I don't think it is poppers. I think that's me thinking that's an actual thing, and so I'm putting it as poppers, but I think it's Rockers to Swallow.
Tell Me What Rockers to Swallow.
It's just a documentary about Yeah's doing a show, basically, in San Francisco. And it's really good. It's mainly about the fans, so it really captures what it's like to go to a gig and be excited about it.
Yeah.
So like interviewing all the fans when they're queuing, and then once they're in, like, but returning to the same people once they're in, then filming like them during the gig, and then afterwards hearing how much they enjoyed it. But it's always like this, and there's like a mother who's brought her son along and things like that, and
and everyone loves the gig, presumably.
Everyone loves the gig.
They don't have a bad one.
They don't have one of the ones you described, where they all come out and go, That was disappointing, actually.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it, but they were 90 minutes late to the stage and she shouted every song.
Yeah, is that what she does sometimes?
Well, I saw them. I've seen them a few times. I saw them supporting John Spencer Blues Explosion.
Cool band.
Great. That was a great night.
I bet they're good live.
With International Noise Conspiracy.
Yeah.
Then Yeah Yeah Yeahs, then John Spencer Blues Explosion. So that was just after the first EP had come out. That was great.
Yeah.
But then I saw them at All Tomorrow's Parties.
Yeah.
And she was so, like, they were 90 minutes late to the stage. She was super, super drunk. And she did Maps, which is obviously a wonderful, sweet song you're looking forward to. She's like, this is the Yeah, Yeah, Yeah sad song. I want to see everybody cry. And I was like, oh, no. And so it was like, oh, this is a song that's so delicate and, you know, fragile. Yeah. And that's what's brilliant about it.
Yeah.
You know?
She's tired of it.
She's tired of it.
That's why. That's one of the things, like, comedians can't do. That bands seem to get away with is kind of go, okay, this is the one everyone likes. I've got it's my banker, but then just get tired of it and deliberately do that thing of going like, okay, here's this one. Who cares? And then it's the and you know what Nirvana did and like you know, start playing Teen Spirit and then stop and go, we're gonna skip that one. Ha ha ha.
Oh yeah.
But like comedians could never go, right. Here's my man draw routine. I just rattle through it with putting no effort in.
You've come out to see Out. Here it is for you guys. I hate it. You love it. You can't be quite so petulant when you're a comic.
Lee Evans can't do Bohemian Rhapsody miming it, just looking like he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
I remember going to see Lee Evans probably like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And he did his whole show and then at the end he's like, well, I'm going to go now with something. And people started shouting out Bohemian Rhapsody. And I remember thinking, oh, I bet he hates that. I bet he hates people shouting out. And he went, oh, yeah, I don't mind. Yeah, if you want me to do it, yeah, I'll do it. I don't mind. And then he went off and he just did it.
That's very sweet.
Yeah, I thought, that's a nice guy there.
I mean, he must have known. He must have had it on the iPod.
It'll be queued up because so many people shout it.
Yeah.
And he just clearly decided going, no, I will do it. They want me to do it. It's fine.
I saw Wayne Coyne. I saw Flaming Lips. And Wayne Coyne did a really nice speech before they did She Don't Use Jelly, back when that was their big song.
Right.
And he was going, we're going to play She Don't Use Jelly because it's a song we've had for ages, but everyone seems to really love it. And we've played it a lot of times. And I always hate it when I see bands come out and go, oh, we're not going to play the big hit or we're going to play it in a different way because we're bored of it. So this is our, you know, and it was really sweet. You thought, oh, actually, you seem like a really good guy.
He does seem like a good guy.
Except for the fact that, again, when I saw them at Primavera and he had been on a 3-day bend and he was out of his mind. It was awful.
Was he in the giant hamster ball
He couldn't stand up. He was so drunk he couldn't stand up, so he was just like falling over and the ball would be moving around the crowd and he couldn't get up again. It was very... That's the problem with the giant hamster ball that if you're not on your game, if you're a little bit hungover...
It's a death trap.
Or you've maybe had a couple of drinks the night before... Oh, no.
It's an absolute death trap. You don't want to be getting in there drunk and just trusting yourself to the hands of the audience.
He's really regretting he's not Kraftwerk there.
Yeah.
Just stand behind the desk, open up the laptop, play the backing track.
They had a good idea. They knew what they were doing.
They knew exactly what they were doing.
Right, well, let's see if... Flaming Lips and Kraftwerk are on my iPod.
Could easily pop up.
So let's see if they're the next one. Here we go. Back to James's iPod now. Oh, no. Oh, not no, it's just not those bands. Oh. It's the Mars Volta. The Mars Volta. A song that lasts over 7 minutes, so we're just going to...
Yeah, you've got to fade that out.
Fade it out, even though I love it.
It's a great song, but, you know, you've got to have a bit of variety on the show.
Yeah.
That's what the show's all about.
Absolutely. It is about that. You can't have Mars Volta for the full...
I mean, we didn't play the full version of Civil War by Guns N' Roses, and that's a good 7:40.
Yeah, that's a long one.
It's a long one, yeah.
It's quite satisfying as a band. When you, I don't know, it's weird, isn't it? Because to get a song that's... In comedy, if you get a really long routine, you're delighted.
Oh, absolutely.
In music, I don't know if it's the same. It's the same. You go, yeah, well done, we wrote a long song. It's not like we got loads out of it. It's just that we just chose to record it more.
Yeah.
We just chose to do more and more.
In comedy, you can't do the same bit over and over again, can
no,
you? You
can't return like, to a chorus.
You remember that punchline from a minute ago? Here it comes again.
Yeah.
You can't have a reprise.
Yeah, you can't do a chorus and everyone sings along.
No.
I mean, maybe. Maybe that's something to...
Comedy you can sing along to.
Yeah. Well, Peter Kay's already...
Oh, he did.
Carry Jokey.
Yeah, the jokes, you know. Which I always thought was a bit of a... I remember, because I saw him at Hammersmith Apollo doing that, and I thought... It's a bit cheeky, isn't it?
Yeah. Cheeky little man.
It's a bit cheeky to say, oh, here's some jokes that you... Like to make a virtue of the fact you're doing old jokes.
Yeah.
that aren't. Yeah. Oh well.
Jokes. Your uncle tells you.
Yeah.
We all know him.
Weird.
You got a favourite joke, Crosby? Favourite joke that maybe a
favourite joke. Joke.
Yeah, favourite joke. Joke. One of my favourite ones was the one of the. There's a. I was walking down the street and met a man who had an orange for a head.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you like that joke?
Like that joke?
Yeah.
Do you want to see? I mean, you should do the rest for the listener.
I just do the setups.
Okay.
And I said to him, "Why have you got an orange for a head?" He said, "I found an old lamp and rubbed it, and genie came out. Grant me 3 wishes. My first wish, I wish for all the money in the world, and I got it. Second wish, I wish for the most beautiful wife and all the land, and it came true. And I said, "What was your third wish?" It said, "I wish for my head to be turned into an orange."
It's such a funny joke.
It's great.
Oh, that's great. Really great.
My favourite jokes when I was a kid were the really convoluted jokes where you'd have to do so much setup, but you could kind of see where it was going. Like, yeah. There was a joke that used to go around my school quite a lot that was about a guy who had a speech impediment
right. And
couldn't say bun.
Yeah.
He said bum.
Yeah.
And great. Couldn't say ticket. He said lick it. And he couldn't say clock.
Yeah.
He said cock.
Yeah.
And of course the punchline is hold my bum and lick it while I take out my cock.
Yeah.
But you know what's coming. I loved it so much because you knew what was coming.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like there were 3 guys,
yeah,
and one's called, you know, F off, and one's called shit, and one's called manners. Yeah. You know, it's like just, yeah, you know where the joke's going to go. Where's your manners? He's around the corner picking up shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was an absolute classic, that
an
one.
An absolute
policeman
classic.
Policeman says, maybe Axl Rose's name was fuck off. Maybe that whole story of him and Slash's grandmother was simply, was his name.
That was, he was introducing himself.
Yeah, fuck you.
He was trying fuck you out as a name before he picked Captain Blowjob.
Yeah.
Which he said.
Said fuck you, and then Slash took it the wrong way. He's like, I'm jumping out this car. He doesn't understand.
I tell you what, I know we are allowed to swear, but it's an exhilarating thrill.
It is, isn't it?
To be able to be in a real radio studio.
I wonder.
But you're allowed to say drop an F-bomb. I have said F-off instead of saying...
You said F-off earlier.
I've said it a few times now.
I didn't pick you up on it.
I know I'm allowed to swear, but it just still, it feels...
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Oh, we're so used to being good boys. We're both good boys, I think.
We are good boys.
You know, I think a lot of the time we've abided by the rules.
Yes.
But still managed to somehow hang out with people who are considered cool.
So considered rebels.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're the sort of straight wingmen.
Yeah.
For some genuine, you know.
All my friends in school were the smokers, the stoners.
Yeah, I hung out with the stoners as well, but yeah, never partook.
Never did.
Didn't enjoy it.
No, I never tried it once because it looked disgusting. That was all I needed. I just looked at it, that looks like the dirtiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So I just never did it. But I had a friend who, it really wound him up. He was like, just smoke with us, man. What are you doing? Just sitting there. I would do what I'm doing now. I would sit by the CD player and just put songs on.
Yeah.
All afternoon. And I'd be that guy.
Why not? You were DJing for stoners.
Yeah, I was loving it.
And it's set you up to do the exact same thing in your real life.
That's what I'm doing. All the listeners are stoners right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this is a great show to roll up a fatty, fire up a blunt.
Blaze it.
Just blaze.
Just blaze.
If I've got one piece of advice, it's just blaze your way through this Sunday
blaze
afternoon.
Blaze that ganja.
Blaze the good green.
the good green.
This is Cypress Hill.
Yeah, this is why this should be, this week should have been the show where we do choose the playlist as we go along. Because we could have gone straight into Dr. Green Thumb or whatever. And
The other thing about marijuana that I don't particularly enjoy is,
yeah,
they didn't half love it, don't they? They didn't half love going on about it.
Yeah.
Like High Times magazine and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like there's a head shop that's opened down my road.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, it's a bit cringeworthy.
It is.
You know?
It's like, how much going on about
I love drinking. But I don't wear a beanie hat with a little picture of a pint on the front of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, it's mental that they have to, you know, I've got to have my Addy Hash t-shirt on.
Yeah.
I know I'm painting in very broad strokes of what stoners are like.
But there are people who are like that.
These things exist.
Yeah, my mum, she just likes buying hemp clothing.
Oh, does she?
So a lot of hers has the label has a cannabis leaf on it. And because of that, she then started buying things that just had the cannabis logo as the main thing, not really putting two and two together. So, like, her keyring is just a big cannabis leaf.
That's just her tag.
Yeah, that's my mum. And she doesn't smoke anything. But, like, she's just going around with this cannabis leaf keyring, and all the kids at her school were like, that's cool, miss.
She's a teacher with it, really.
Oh, yeah, just walking around with that and not putting two and two together until we kind of said to her, mum, you really should know that that is also, that's not just used for making clothes that you like.
That is actually, that is a very dangerous drug.
Very dangerous.
People are ODing on cannabis every day. You're setting a very bad example.
Losing all the
Her name
stars.
Is Mary Jane as well, isn't it?
Yeah, her name is
Mary Jane Acaster.
Mary Jane Blaze. Mary Jane Blaze them up. It's her name. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, if you're going to change your name by Deepole, then make it something interesting. That's what I say. Matthew Crosby's iPod. Will it be ganja based? We don't know. Kind of.
Oh my, kind of. This is a great stoner song.
A lot of stoners will be listening to this.
Oh my god.
It absolutely pains me to have to fade out Stairway to Heaven. I feel like this is going to be on my conscience for a long time, to be honest.
It's a real shame because we were barely even getting warmed up.
Yeah. We were saying when it was playing, it's a good example of a song that's a proper long song.
But it doesn't outstay its welcome.
What a long song should be. It doesn't outstay its welcome. It has to be that long in order for it to work. Just flows nicely. Built. Oh, it's beautiful.
It's a gorgeous song.
Forget how good it is.
Once this show is over, go and find it and listen to it.
Yeah, go and listen to it. I am really sorry that I just faded out Stairway to Heaven. Yeah. I mean, unforgivable.
It is unforgivable. We don't have time. I mean, once this show is over, we'll carry on listening to it, you and I.
Yeah.
we've got it on pause right there.
On pause, so we can just pick it up from where we left off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I urge the listener to do the same.
Yeah, yeah, go listen to Stairway to Heaven. And other long songs, just to fill your day.
Yeah, it's been a show of long songs, isn't it?
Long songs, quite chilled out songs for the most part.
Very relaxed. Bit of Mars Volta was a bit of a kick up the arse.
Yeah, yeah, they kind of came storming in at one point.
But even when even Guns N' Roses was very, sedate.
Yeah. Now we were talking about drugs a lot. Mars Volta, big druggers.
Do they?
Yeah, but
I thought they were such nice boys.
Yeah, but with them, it's not. See, they do it proper, like how it used to be done, in that it just it almost like it's just a part of the music, and no one really makes a big deal out of it.
Yeah,
and
what's their drug of choice?
Do you LSD. Know?
Really? Right. So they're not messing around.
Yeah, they're mainly doing LSD, and it's going bananas. I mean, you've heard that music.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because I was watching Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads thing.
Right, yeah, yeah.
They were a big drug band.
Right.
But their drug was cocaine.
Right,
I guess because it was the 80s.
Yeah.
And apparently he used to run off between songs. Just run off at the end of the song, do a line of coke, run back on. I mean, no wonder he does such erratic dancing.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah.
Fleetwood Mac, obviously.
Fleetwood Mac, yeah, yeah. Famously, I'm seeing Fleetwood Mac, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm going to see them next month with my parents.
That is great.
It's going to be great fun. But yeah, famously, didn't she blow her nose out in the shower?
Yep.
Gross.
Yeah, and then got it blown up her anus.
Yes.
For a straw, golden straw.
Because if all the whatever, was it in your nose that absorbs the cocaine? I don't know.
Something.
But why not? Why not? If there's parts, I think why not have it up the... Because
if you've messed your nose up like that, you may as well carry on doing coke now.
You can't go in through the ear.
You can't go in through the ear.
Do you think she tried? Did she try? I've done the nostrils. Can I go in through the ears first?
I don't want to do the butt.
It's not dignified at the best of times, crouching over a toilet bowl, snorting lines of cocaine.
Yeah.
But having to take your trousers down to do it, or in Stevie Nicks' case, pull up your diaphanous sort of flowing robe.
Yeah.
That's got to be bad. She must have just had to go commando for parties, because otherwise it's...
I can't put pants on. I'm going to have to be having cocaine blown up my butt, so I've got to be going around.
Whose job was that?
Easy access.
Was that Mick Fleetwood? Did he have to do it? I suppose she...
Lindsay Buckingham wouldn't have done it. I tell you what, he'd have turned that down. They were already finished. They'd already had a messy breakup at that point. It was like, that is not what... Maybe back in the day I would have done this for you, but not now.
You can't ask your ex to get the golden straw out.
No. It's too... Forget it.
It's too intimate.
Also, you wouldn't trust, like, if that was me having to blow cocaine up an ex-girlfriend's butt, I wouldn't trust her to let me know which end of the straw to blow into in terms of what was used last time.
Yeah.
I'd go, no, this is a revenge thing. This is a power trip. And you want to get me to blow into the dirty end?
I think what you'd have to do is attach a...
Is that where we're ending the show?
You'd have to attach a, like the end of a trumpet.
Yeah.
So that there was definitely an end of a trumpet, so you knew that was the... That was the end. That was the business end.
Yeah, yeah, you would. So, yeah, it's like a blowpipe. Matthew Crosby, thank you for coming in today.
It's been an absolute delight. Who
absolute
knew?
Pleasure to see you. Brilliant iPod. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You've come off completely unscathed.
Cheers.
And we'll see you next time. Very nice being back. See ya. Bye.